Usually for the talk on a Friday evening, I usually get requests. However, this week I can't remember what the request was. So I'm going to give a talk on what I want to talk about. Last week, we were talking about reincarnation, rebirths. And so this week, I'm going to talk about how this rebirth happens. The topic of this evening's talk is one of the most profound in Buddhism. It's going to be on dependent origination. Because a lot of times people ask, now and again, can you give us a more profound, deeper talk on Buddhism? And of course, the challenge of giving a deeper talk on Buddhism is being able to make it sort of acceptable, understandable to those who come into the center for the very first time. So hopefully that I can put this in such a way that you can understand it and you can make sense of it and then you can make use of it in your lives even now. Because this is one of the fundamental teachings of all types, streams of Buddhism. In brief, it's just saying just how one gets reborn to this place or another. And not only that, but it can be applied even in this life. And it actually shows you just how you can gain greater freedom. Freedom in the states of mind which you actually have to deal with in life. How you can really let go. How you can have happiness. How you can be at peace no matter what is happening in your life. It all starts with the fundamental teaching or realization of a Buddhist that the mind is the forerunner of all things. The mind is the chief. The mind is the most powerful thing in the whole world. And this is why that as Buddhists, we actually train the mind in meditation. And when you start training the mind in meditation and see what it can do, it's amazing just what one starts to learn, how what one understands. Not only does one understand, you know, the truth of such things as rebirth, but also starts to see how it all happens. For those of you who are traditional Buddhists, you know that the three great insights, the three big insights, people talk about insight meditation, these are the three big ones, which the Buddha gained under the Bodhi tree, was the insight into past lives. Number two, the insights into karma. Number three, the insights into the Four Noble Truths, which led to enlightenment. They're the three insights. The Te Wijo is called. Those are the big ones. Sometimes the Buddhists called it the three breaking outs of the chicken from the egg. Little chick being hatched. The first breaking out is when they see rebirth. The second, when they understand the law of karma. And the third, when they're fully enlightened. That's what the Buddha said. So these are the big insights. Last week, I talked about the first of those big insights, the understanding and rebirth. Now I'm going to start to talk about the karma, dependent origination, how these things actually happen. And it gives you a huge understanding on what's going on in your life right now. In brief, dependent origination says that you get reborn according to two major factors. One is what you want to be in your next life. Your craving, your will, your desire, your preferences. And this is why I said last week that some people like to be reborn as cats or dogs. Simply because the cat or the dog does not need to go to work on a Monday morning. They don't even need to go and find their own food. And sometimes people just look at only half the story and think, yeah, that's what I want to be. Other people are even more stupid. They want to be reborn as rich people and famous people in their next life. Do you want to be rich? And no one answers me anymore because, you know, always if you answer me, you get into big trouble. Usually it's trick questions. Now, being rich, people actually assume that if you win the lotto, you become rich, you're going to be very happy. But is that really the case? Okay, I'm going to give today's funny story now. It's one of my old stories, but it's a very good one, which works in right now. It's the story of the old Mexican fisherman. This particular story began on the coast of Mexico by a fishing village. And there, just before lunch, an American was watching a fisherman come in, unload his catch, and actually go back home. The American stopped the fisherman and said, "Excuse me, sir, if you don't mind, can I ask you what you're doing?" And the fisherman said, "Sir, I've just been fishing. I've caught enough fish to look after myself and my family. A bit to, few fish to sell to pay my bills. Now I'm going to go and have lunch with my wife. After lunch, I'll have a little siesta. After siesta, in the afternoon, I'll play with my children. After dinner, I'll probably go to the cantina, play a bit of guitar, have a little to drink, well, not too much. So life is good." An American said, "If you don't mind, I'll give you a bit of free advice, because I'm actually a business professor from a very big business school in the United States. I'm down here on vacation. I'm going to give you some good advice to help you. Why don't you go out in the afternoon after lunch? Then you can catch twice as much fish. You'll be able to make more money. After a while, you'll be able to hire some crew with all that extra money. Then you'll be able to catch four times as many fish. In about a year or two, you'll be able to buy a second boat with the crew. With that type of business plan, with about 5 or 6 years, you'll probably have a whole fleet of boats. Once you have a whole fleet of boats, you can move your business, your headquarters, to Los Angeles. And there you can diversify. As the CEO of your company, you can award yourself a big salary. Then you can actually float the company on the stock market and afterwards do a share buyback. That's how you make millions of dollars. In about 15 years, you'll be a millionaire. I guarantee it. That's how it's done. I'm a Harvard business professor. I know about these things." And the Mexican fisherman was listening very carefully to this and very respectfully. And only at the end, he said, "But, senor, what would I do with all those millions of dollars?" The strange thing happened that the business professor had never thought the business plan out that far. You only think about making the money, not what you're going to do with it once you've got it. So the professor thought for a while and said, "Well, with all that money, you can retire. You can retire to a nice fishing village like this one. You can buy yourself a little boat just for fun to go out in the mornings and catch a bit of fish. You'll be able to spend lunch every day with your wife and have a siesta afterwards. You'll be able to play with your kids every afternoon. And in the evening, you can always go to the canteen and have a good time with your friends." And he said, "Senor, I do that already." Isn't that the case? People want to be rich so they can live like poor people. Now, we sometimes ask ourselves, do we really want to be rich? Do we want to be reborn in a rich family? Is that the best we can do? Now, sometimes, do we want to be reborn as a famous person? There was a friend of mine who was, we were monks together in the first years in Thailand. He was from LA. He was in one of these colleges, and at that time, you actually got to know some of the film stars. He was hired as a bouncer for this party by, who was that fellow who played like Dirty Harry? What's his name? Film star? Clint Eastwood. That's right, Clint Eastwood. Because Clint Eastwood went to the same university and the same fraternity. So he went as a bodyguard for him. And he always liked to try and hang out around the stars. He found out where Bob Dylan was staying. This was like 30 years ago, where Bob Dylan was staying when he was giving some concerts in L.A. And so he knew somebody who managed to sneak in and spend the evening with Bob Dylan. And I always remember him telling me, he had this conversation with Bob Dylan. He said, "It must be really great to be famous." And Bob Dylan sort of looked at him and just said, "You must be crazy. It's hell to be famous." And he sort of went into a big spiel about what it's like to be a famous person. It's like being a prisoner. You can never go out and be free. You never do what you want to do. People are always recognizing you. They're always treating you as if you were an alien, some freak. He said, it's terrible to be famous. So why do some people want to be famous? Why do they want to be rich? Why do they want to be a cat in the next life or a dog in their life? That's stupidity, that's why. Now, this is interesting because the Buddha said that it's ignorance, delusion, which is a cause for the karma, making the karma and having the desire to get reborn as this and that in the next world or even in this world. As a young man, I couldn't figure out why it was that some people would go to these particular pubs in London, and at the end of the evening, there would always be a fight. Inevitably, on a Friday night, Saturday night, there would always be punch-ups. What do you want to go to a pub like that for? Because people wanted to. That's what they aspired to. That's what they liked. That's what they thought was fun. Just like some people think being a cat or being a dog is fun. What do you think is fun? What is your ideas of happiness and joy? Some people's ideas of happiness and joy is going to these extreme sports. It's exactly like what the Americans did in Iraq. So you torture yourself, but you pay people to do it for you. So what do you want to do that for? Imagine, I've seen these pictures of these people going into these towers, a death drop. You're falling 100 feet, and miraculously it just stops before you hit the ground. Or you go these upside down with these rides. What do people do that for? They must be crazy to do things like that. Why? Because you want to do it. Strange what people think is happiness in this world. So what do you think is happiness in this world? If you are deluded, you'd always look at that happiness as being something important. And you want to do it. And you can spend thousands for it. So it seems some people, they go and spend their holidays going to these holiday camps called Club Med. And I was reading about what happens in Club Med from the very beginning in the morning. There's something to do. There's activities all throughout the day. You're playing games, you're playing soccer, you're playing tennis, you're doing scuba diving, you're skiing. My goodness, you're not already too tired and stressed out. You have 2 weeks of all this. And worse, you have to pay for it. Why do people do such things? Well, other people, wise people, they go and spend their holidays at my monastery. That's also Club Med, Club Med Serpentine, Club Meditation, we call it, Serpentine. And then they spend such a peaceful time, they've got nothing to do, just meditate and have an easy time. And when they go home, they say, oh, where did you go for your holiday? Did you go to Bali? Did you go to Europe? Did you go to sort of Hawaii? I said, no, I went to Serpentine, to a monastery for 2 weeks. They think you're crazy. But you are much happier. Why? Now, already one sees that where one thinks happiness is, that's where one goes. People who like fights go to places where there's fights. People who just want to have activity, doing things all day, they go to places where there's lots of activity. People who like to sleep all day like a cat, get reborn as a cat. Now to understand how rebirth happens. What we want to do, our inclinations, where we think happiness lies, what we think we should be doing, that's where we get reborn. They say it's the combination of karma and desire. Karma is actually this, your wealth, if you like, your spiritual wealth, and desire is what you want to do. And of those two, it is the craving, the desire, which is the strongest. Sometimes in Buddhism, we say there are hell realms. Why would anyone get reborn in a hell realm? It's very easy to see, because even in this life, people want to live in hell realms. They aspire, they want that. You know what the hell realm I'm talking is? Actually, there's many hell realms in the human life. One of them is called guilt. Another one is called anger. Another one is called grief. They're amazing hell realms. Now, why do we have to do that? Why do we have to wallow or be in that prison of grief or anger or guilt? Guilt and anger are the same things. It's only guilt is that thing towards oneself. Anger is the same thing towards somebody else. The same movement of the mind, different objects, that's all. Now, why do we put ourselves in that prison of like guilt? Strange thing, but when you look at it, it's because you want to feel guilty. You feel you have to be guilty. You think there's no other way but to be guilty. It's called delusion. And a person who has done so-called bad karma, who's hurt other people, done wrong things, at the end of their life, they will seek to be punished. They don't know forgiveness. They go into lower realms, into even hell realms then, because they're seeking punishment. In the very same way that when we do something wrong in this life, why do we seek punishment? Why do we seek to keep on bringing up our past, thinking we have to remember all those terrible things which somebody did to us? Why? The wonderful thing which I learned from Buddhism is you don't have to do that at all. You don't need to work through the past. You can let it go at any time you want. Remember a friend from here. He used to come very regularly many years ago. I've lost contact with him now. Remember him telling me the story when he grew up. He grew up in Sydney. And one day in Sydney, he must have been about 5 or 6 year old, he was playing with his best friend on one of the many piers in the harbour. For a joke, boys being boys, he pushed his best friend into the water. Unfortunately, his best friend drowned. And he was responsible, so he thought. Can you imagine what it's like? His best friend, his parents live next door. They'd grown up together. He had to witness the sadness, the grief of the people next door. And he was the one responsible. Even though the parents understood it was just boys being boys, it was an accident. You don't mean to kill anybody. It's only a 6-year-old, that's all. They soon told him, forget it, forgive it. But he couldn't. He couldn't forgive himself for what he'd done. And so for many, many years, he was a little depressed boy with no happiness or very little happiness, never did very well at school, until in his teens. This is how he told it to me. He said he woke up one morning and he had the realization he did not need to feel guilty anymore. And then he just walked out of that prison of guilt which he had made for himself. That's how he overcame the problem. And then he could actually continue on his life and afterwards became very successful. But it was a fascinating way he said that. He just decided he didn't need to feel guilty anymore. He could let it go. It's as if there was a prison there. There was a hell there. And the door was always open. But for many years, he didn't want to walk through that door into the freedom beyond guilt. Whether it's guilt, whether it's grief, whether it's anger, or any other hell realm which we can live in this life, we can let it go at any moment. It's a wonderful thing which I've learned about the power of the mind. The bad karma which we have, we carry it around with us. We think we need to deal with it. We think we have to deal with it because we don't know that at any moment we can be free. Do you understand what I mean here? When you look at the bad things you've done, sometimes we don't think we should forget those things. We think we have to keep remembering them. We have to keep working through them. We have to keep punishing ourselves. Why? There is no reason, the Buddha said. You can acknowledge, you can forgive, you can learn the old AFL code. Acknowledge, forgive, learn. Anything at any time. And then you are free. If you don't know that way of wisdom, the way of stopping rebirth into the hell realms, you may acknowledge, but you don't forgive. We keep carrying this around with us for all our lives sometimes. We victimize ourselves.
I've known many people who are wise people, who had terrible things happen to them in life. But they let it go. They free themselves from the possibility of hell. Two people, the same experiences. Why does one person learn, let it go, and walk on, and another person just dwells in the pain of that experience year after year after year? We put ourselves in hell because of delusion. And we want to be there. Because we want to be there, we stay there forever and ever and ever. It's made a point at a talk I gave to the novices in Anagarika's Admonition last night about the fact that you can let go of these things. And why it is, according to Buddhism, the stream winner, the first stage of enlightenment, that they are can never go into the hell realms or the lower realms ever again. The only rebirth they can have is as human beings or in the deva realms, the angelic, the heaven realms. Why is that? And the reason is the stream winner knows how to forgive. They don't need to punish themselves anymore. They can let go. Now, each one of you who's got pain and suffering, who's making you suffer? Is it somebody else's fault? If it's somebody else's fault, you can't solve the problem. It is your fault. No matter what other people do, say, it's no one else's fault except your fault. For those of you who haven't heard this before, my teacher Ajahn Chah put it very succinctly, very beautifully, in a way that you'll always remember. He said, when you blame somebody else for your suffering, it's like having an itch on the bottom and scratching your head. Remember that one? If you've got an itch on your bottom and you scratch your head, you get two itches for the price of one. And that's often what we do. We're hurting and we blame our husband or our wife or our monk or the government or somebody. Somebody's to blame for this. And when you look for someone to blame, you've got an itch on your bottom and you're scratching your head. So you're no one except you. But what do we mean about blaming? Blaming doesn't mean that we've got to sort of endure that itch. We don't scratch at all. Scratch that itch and get it over and done with. It's gone. But scratch in the right place. So all of the trouble which we've had, it's not the trouble which is a problem. It's the way we look at it, our attitude towards it, how we deal with it. That is the problem. What I'm saying here is that no matter what has happened to you in life, no matter how hard it has been, you do not need to make a hell out of that experience. You can let it go at any time. It's the past. It's gone. It's finished. Why do we need to keep thinking about this? It's like that old story which I've said about somebody calls you an idiot. And then afterwards you start thinking, why did they call me an idiot? They've got no right to call me an idiot. They shouldn't call me an idiot. I'm not an idiot. And you've allowed them to call you an idiot four more times. Every time you remember that, you've allowed them to punish you. Why do we do that? Okay, so you've had a hard, bitter experience in the past. Why do you allow that pain to linger in the present? Can't we just let it go? Can't we just say, someone called me an idiot, and just forget about it? Why do we have to keep thinking about it? Why do we have to keep carrying it? Why do we have to keep torturing ourselves? Because of delusion. We choose to do that. We think we should do it. We think we need to be punished. Here, punishment is just a means of control. Sometimes we don't want to forgive somebody. If we forgive them, we think we can't control them anymore. They get out of hand. If we don't have prisons and penalties and punishments, what would happen to this world? Everything would just be chaos. It would get worse. Can you see the fear of letting go? Sometimes we think that controlling is the only way to have happiness in this world, to have sense, to have meaning. But the truth of the matter is completely opposite. The more you control, the more uncertain life is. The more troublesome it is. The more frustrating it is. You know what happens to control freaks. They usually end up getting depressed. That's the usual terminus for the control freak bus. Because you find that this world just doesn't, it's not amenable to what you want. We get depressed and we feel we're failures. You've tried and you failed. Welcome to the club. So instead of trying, sometimes we go the opposite direction. We let go, we accept, we allow things to be. We're not controlling the world by exerting punishments. We're forgiving the world with love. Can you see the opposites there? Too often, we don't love other people, we don't love ourselves, we don't forgive. We want to punish ourselves. It's inner hatred. Strange thing with human beings in the Western world. Why? Guilt, lack of self-esteem, anger, grief is such a strong part of the Western culture. That's why there's just so many psychologists and psychiatrists in our Australian society. And we're needing more. It's getting worse. What is going on? I'll tell you what's going on. We're just getting caught up in this blaming, negativity, fault-finding mind. To put it very briefly, a little anecdote from Ajahn Chah, which I've been saying in the last month or two. The story of the person who's raising chickens, and instead of collecting the eggs in the morning, they just collect the chicken shit. What a stupid thing that is to do. Now, imagine you're someone who does that. You just collect the chicken shit instead of collecting the eggs. That's what each one of you does. All the good eggs of your life, which you've, you know, you have laid in the past, you collect those? All the good things you've done? All the good memories? All the beautiful things, the wonderful things you've done? No! You just collect all the faults or things which have gone wrong. You're just chicken shit collectors. Fault finders. You look at the past and what do you think of? What happened today? Do you think of all the things which went right or all the things which went wrong? Do you think of all the mistakes, the terrible things which happened, or the wonderful experiences you've had today? Some people can't even find the wonderful experiences. They've got so much chicken shit there, it just covers all the eggs, and that's all they see. They can't even recognize eggs anymore and good experiences. Now you understand what we have, this negative type of mind. Always collecting the chicken shit in life instead of the eggs. Now I'll give you a piece of advice. Remember that simile when you're dead. When you're dying, make sure when you look back upon your life just past, you don't collect the chicken shit. Don't think of all the things you've done wrong or the mistakes. Otherwise, you'll consign yourself to a lower realm. A hell realm, even. Collect the eggs instead. That's classic Buddhist advice on the dying process. To remember all the beautiful, good, wonderful, kind, generous, compassionate things you've done in your life. Go and collect the eggs. Leave the chicken shit for somebody else. That is how we get beautiful rebirths. Through wisdom, instead of delusion, informs the karma and the craving, the will, to choose what is wonderful. Now, do you understand how that works in this life as well? Why is it that people linger on all the mistakes in life? All the rotten things which happened? or the wrong things which somebody else did to you. We're so unfair. Now, as a monk, as a meditator, you actually need to learn that by collecting the chicken eggs, this is, one, it's allowable, it's wise, it helps yourself, and it helps other people. It's just wisdom, it's compassionate, it's the obvious way to go when you see it. All your faults, let it go. All the people who've died in your life, leave them at the crematorium. And you live with the live ones. Why is it that somebody dies and some people, they can't even be with their other children, with their other relations, with their other loved ones? They become obsessed just with this one person who's died. They don't leave the corpse of the crematorium or the graveyard. They carry it around with them for the rest of their lives. Sure, it's chicken shin, but can't we leave that and instead carry the eggs? Now you can understand just how it's our mind and our attitude which creates the suffering and the pain in our life, which burdens us, which stops us being free, which can actually make us go into a hell realm rather than getting reborn in a heaven realm. They have this idea in ancient Buddhism that when you die, that you get some sort of judge. He's even got a name called Yama, the king of death, who comes along and judges you when you die. What have you done? How many donations have you given to the Buddhist Society of Western Australia? When you come in here, and how many times you just sneaked out? How many times have you been unkind to your parents? How many times have you not paid your taxes properly? Or whatever else it is, terrible things you've done. You know that when I was a young man, just, you know, trying to get some money just to basically to go out with girls at the time, I got a job as selling encyclopedias door to door. One of the worst possible jobs. It was actually children's encyclopedias. I was desperate to get some money. But the worst thing which happened to me was I actually sold one. And I felt so guilty afterwards. And it was all a bunch of lies, you know, what you had to say. And your idea as a salesperson was to make those parents feel as if they were, you know, almost like child molesters not to buy this encyclopedia. You know, that you were sort of stopping your child sort of from actually growing and becoming intelligent. You're just hindering their success in life because these encyclopedias, this was really what they needed to get on in life. And there was this very, very lovely couple when I knocked on their door and they were just, you know, actually they just had a child and I had this encyclopedia and I sold it. I felt so terrible. I gave up the job after that because I could live with myself. I thought this poor, you know, struggling couple, they just brought this bunch of old rubbish from me, you know, and I sold it to them and probably their child was going to starve now because they probably wouldn't be able to afford all the food. And you know how you exaggerate things. And I felt so miserable for myself for years after that. And until one day I told that story here maybe 10 years ago and someone came up to me afterwards and said, "No, Ajahn Brahm, I don't know if it was you, probably unlikely, but when I was very young," they say, "as a child, some salesman came around and sold this children's encyclopedia." He said, "I loved it. It was one of my favourite books. It gave me so much happiness." And it made me actually start to think maybe that could have been me. But anyway, why is it we always look at the worst possible aspects of it? Why is it that when we have this terrible feeling of guilt, we're judging ourselves just so unfairly? As I was. And I realized this judge at the time of death is exactly the same. It's no other person than you. At the time of death, it's not some sort of god Yama who's actually judging you. It is you. So you're going to judge yourself when you die. You're going to actually say, "Where do I want to go now I'm dead? Now I'm dead. What sort of life do I deserve?" You can understand that most people in Australia will choose hell. because they got all this guilt trip, because they're psychotic. And that's where psychotic people go. And they think, oh, I'm terrible, I'm hopeless, I did this, I did that. And you carry around that past and you never forgive yourself. You never deal with it, let it go and move on. So no wonder you have to linger in hell. The doors of hell are open. The beings in the hell realms can leave at any time. It's just they don't want to. The demons say, are you ready yet? Do you want to go? No. They don't think it's right for them to go yet. Do you understand what I mean? Because you can see that in your own mind. All of the pain in your past. Are you ready to go yet? Are you ready to let it go and drop it and leave it? The door is always open. It doesn't matter what happened to you. You may have been abused as a child, beaten by your parents, even sexually abused. You may have had a terrible upbringing. You may have had a terrible marriage and just didn't work out and it's been horrendous. The door of that prison is open right now. You can walk out at any moment. You can be free. Why don't we? Number one, because we're not encouraged. Number two, because we're deluded to think we have to be punished. Number three, we haven't learned that courage, that wisdom, that insight to really let go, to take charge of karma rather than being a victim of it. The Buddha even said again and again, all you need to do is to acknowledge, forgive, let go, learn. There was no punishment by the Buddha, even when monks misbehaved. The worst you would do is actually just have to go and tell the other monks what you got up to. That's the worst. There was no beatings. There was no sort of harsh punishments. And you often wondered why. When other places they would punish, but not in Buddhism. Why is it such a soft religion? Because this is actually realizing it doesn't matter what a person has done, what they've done, you can let go immediately. This story in Buddhism about this Angulimala, this serial killer. With all of that pain and that psychosis of being a serial killer, the Buddha taught him and he became enlightened within a couple of weeks. He taught him to stop. Stop carrying the past. Stop dwelling on it. Stop carrying the chicken shit from the chickens. Instead, leave that, pick up the eggs. There's this beautiful woman called Patachara, one of my heroes in the ancient texts, who lost her two children, her husband, her mother and father on the same day, to accidents. She went absolutely crazy. She lost her mind and was ranting, completely mindless, until she wandered in to where the Buddha was staying, completely naked. She'd sort of dropped all of her clothes. Imagine if somebody came in completely naked into this hall right now. What would you do? You'd say, Ajahn Brahm, look the other way. You can't come in here dressed like that. But the Buddha said, no, let her in. Someone put a robe around her. Let her in. And the Buddha taught her. And she became this amazing teacher, fully enlightened, one of the sort of heroes in the time of the Buddha, one of the greatest teachers of the time. She didn't need to go through psychotherapy for years and years and years and years, because she knew how to let it go. To let go, forgive, stop the grief, stop the anger, stop the guilt, and completely discard it. It's in Buddhism we call this ahosi karma. Karma that was, which will never arise again, is all gone. Now, this is what you can do. At any time, I don't know what is troubling you. What is your difficulty? What is your pain? What is the part of you from the past which you haven't really dealt with yet? You don't need to bring it up. You don't need to figure it all out. You don't need to work with it, through it. You just need to let it go. This beautiful word, which takes huge amounts of courage. Encouragement is what I'm doing now, giving that courage, giving that advice, giving that possibility that you can let go at any moment. Be free. It's scary to let go, because a lot of times when we start getting guilty, afraid, fearful, it is what we say in Buddhism, we make a self out of that. We become the guilty person. We become the afraid person. We become the person who's got grief. Some years ago, when I gave a talk at a grief seminar, I gave the usual talk about letting go of grief, showing that in the Buddhist cultures where I'd come from, the grief just didn't exist. In northeast Thailand, I was staying in a cremation monastery. There was a cremation there every week or so, because all the villagers around used that monastery as a crematorium. And as Wat Nanachai, anyone who's been there, you can see in the very centre of the monastery is a crematorium, and actually I helped build that one. Very simple one. And all those years, I was 9 years in that monastery, never once did I see someone cry. I saw them the next day, the day afterwards, on the arms round. There wasn't grief. You see, Asian people, Buddhists, they don't have guilt. They've done something wrong. Yeah, I've done something wrong, sorry. I'll try better next time. But they don't have all this psychosis guilt, which I've seen in the West. They don't get so angry. You know, like children, you see them, they're fighting, and 5 minutes later, they're playing again. I've seen that as well. It's an amazing ability to forgive. It's in the Western world we've lost it. We've lost the ability to let go. We have all this guilt. Someone has done something wrong for you, and you hate them for the rest of your life, my goodness sake. What do you do that for? They made a mistake, yeah. Everyone makes mistakes, even big mistakes. Even if it's a big mistake, there's no reason to allow them to upset your happiness. Why do you have to keep thinking about them and going over that problem again and again and again, and allowing them to hurt you again and again every time you think about that? You permit the pain to come into your mind again. Why can't you just let it go, so you don't even think about it ever again? You think about all the good things they've done. You pick up the eggs, not the chicken shit. What about what you've done? Why is it we're into such guilt? We're always worrying and thinking about what we've done. A lot of the time we've done nothing. It's just so crazy sometimes. When anything goes wrong, we tend to blame ourselves. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. I should have done something else. Why did I do this? Oh, I'm really hopeless. If I did it again, I'd do something else. If you had the time over again, you'd probably make a worse job of it, basically. But we always think that we've made terrible mistakes. And when you think you made terrible mistakes, you get guilty. You lose your sleep. You lose your health. You lose your happiness, which means you can't be effective in this world. You can't do anything. You become a pain to live with. You're punishing yourself again. And also, you're punishing others. So can't we just let go? What's wrong with forgiving ourselves? What's wrong with just letting go? Isn't that what love truly is? The door of my heart is open to you no matter what you've done. The door of my heart is open to me no matter what I've done. If you open up the door of your heart to yourself, you feel this amazing sense of happiness and peace. You're in heaven. Isn't that what love is all about? Compassion. Entering heaven. So at the time of your death, instead of thinking of all the bad things you've done, why not forgive them and say the door of my heart's open to me, no matter all the terrible things I've done? Then the guilt goes. The hell realms are no longer open for you. Instead, you've only got heaven realms. Happiness. Isn't that what it feels like when you forgive someone like that, or you forgive yourself? You say, enemy, no matter what you've done, the door of my heart's open to you. Aren't you entering heaven in this very life? Think of that enemy you've got, the person who's hurt you, the person who's the worst person in the world, who's really made your life. Have they made your life a misery? I was almost going to say that. They haven't made your life a misery. You've allowed them to make your life a misery. But whatever that person is, can't you just let it go? Forgive them. Door of my heart's open. You can come in as well. That's heaven. When you understand that, you understand what rebirth is, how heaven realms occur. You understand how heaven realms occur in this life. You understand how hell realms occur, how hell realms occur in this life. You're understanding the way of rebirth. You're understanding karma in its deepest sense. You are making karma every moment. You're not a victim of karma. It's not what other people do. It's how you relate to what other people do. The karma has got the chicken shit, it's got the eggs. There's always chicken shit, there's always eggs when there's chickens around. The point is, which ones are you going to pick up? That's the karma, what you pick up. Now you understand that how, when you understand the law of karma, how you can be free, how you can be happy, how you are in complete control of your happiness when you know through wisdom what karma truly is. How you can be happy no matter what happens outside. Even it might be a big pile of chicken shit, there's always a few eggs there. Dig around, pick out the eggs and walk on. Whatever happens to you in life, there's always some very beautiful moments, some wonderful moments. No matter who you are, you've always got what they call in Mahayana Buddhism, Buddha nature. That's the eggs. That Buddha nature is in every part of your experience. Every day, there's wonderful moments, beautiful moments. Why can't we take those? Why can't we let go of the faults, the bad? Why can't we just forgive, let go? No guilt, no anger, no grief. You can do that. The next thing which happens is no fear. Fear is just a reflection in time of guilt and anger. It's just getting guilty or angry about the future. It's called fear. So here we're learning just how the mind is a forerunner of all things. Not the world, it's the mind. The way we look at it, our attitudes, our relationships to the things which we have to experience in life. It's not the thing in itself causes a problem. It's our relationship with it. There's a great discovery of the Buddha. The desire or the ill will. I want this or I don't want this. Those are the two enemies. It doesn't matter what it is. It's how we deal with it. Our wanting and our lack of content, which is contentment, which is the opposite. It's amazing just how you can be content with anything. How you can be content with being sick. How you can be content with failing. You know that when I first started this job as being an abbot, it was because a senior monk at the time, he just went off and he fell in love. I never expected that to happen. And so I was left, you know, with being an abbot unexpectedly. It broke all my plans. So I remember thinking, it doesn't matter what happens. If I'm a terrible abbot and a terrible teacher, if no one actually comes to my talks, or I start giving a talk and after a few minutes everyone heads for the door, I thought, great, marvellous, now I can be a hermit. I can just sit there quietly in my monastery. I've done my best, but I just can't be a teacher. Oh, it'll be wonderful just to be a peaceful monk. So I thought, you know, if I stuff up, if I fail as a teacher, it'd be great. And then I thought, but then if I become a good teacher and people keep listening to the talks, great, I can help other people. That gives me so much happiness. Didn't matter what happened. I could look upon it in that way and make it happy. I was just collecting eggs. That's all. And I do that in my life now. This evening I'm going to Japan. What if the plane has got a terrorist on it? What if it blows up? Oh, it's wonderful. I can have a rest now. I don't have to give these talks every Friday night and all of that. I don't have to face, you know, old age and sickness. You know, like there's some of these people going to these old people's homes. We're actually talking, and it's amazing. We've been 21 years at our monastery now. There's some old monks. We're talking about like making an old monk's home. Getting a piece of property in Manjua. I think that's the place you're supposed to go. That's the real departure lounge. You're getting an old monk's home there where old monks can sit and talk about old times. Remember that talk I gave at Nolamara 20 years ago? But wouldn't it be wonderful if you die in a plane crash, you don't have to face that anymore? Oh, beautiful. I always collect the eggs, no matter what happens. They can understand just how that is an appropriate attitude to life. An appropriate attitude to death as well. Why this whole idea of rebirth happens. We are completely free at our death to go to the highest heaven or the lowest hell. We choose to go there. It's a scary realization that some people choose to go to pubs and have fights because they think that's happiness. I think I mentioned before, because one of our monks was from Norway. The Viking heaven. This is where all the Vikings, they aspire, if they're being good Vikings, to go. Valhalla, it's called. And in Valhalla, when you arrive there, there's always this big feast. And then you go get roaring drunk. And then you have this amazing fight where everybody dies. And then you wake up again and start all over with a big feast, more drinking and more fighting. You know, the three best things in life for a Viking: eating, drinking and fighting. And that's their heaven realm. That's what they aspire for. What do you aspire for? A nice big house? Two kids? It's crazy as the Vikings, as far as I'm concerned. But if that's what you want, that's what you'll get. It's all what you want, that's all. What do you want? A marvellous question. What do I want? When the answer is, I want for nothing, then you're the wealthiest person in the world. Isn't that what we say? Billionaires, they want for nothing. They've got anything they ever want. There's three people here who want for nothing. That's all I want in life. Nothing. Nah, that's the only way you can really have happiness. No wanting. Whatever you want, that's where you get reborn. We all make our heaven realms, and some of those we think they're heaven, but they're hell. We feel we have to do this. We have to go through this. We pick up this pain because of delusion. You don't have to do that. You don't have to have grief, anger, fear. You just choose to, out of craziness. And somebody, because everyone else does the same, that's probably why you do it. But I stand up here and say, no, I'm not doing that. I'm going to rebel. I'm not going to get angry. I'm not going to get guilty. I'm not going to get afraid. I refuse to do that. I'm a rebel.
But a Whaley psychiatrist says, I'm a rebel, I'm not going to do that. According to psychiatry, anyone who doesn't have sex is a deviant. So that's me. I'm rebelling against all that. They say you can't be happy. Apparently they say that you have to have wine and sex to live a long life. Especially if you're a male. I read that in the newspapers. So I'm going to rebel. I'm going to live a long life just to show them. Well, the point is, you're rebelling. And it's important to be a rebel. Otherwise, you just do what other people say you expect you to do. You become guilty because that's our culture, to be guilty. You've been taught that. Do you feel guilty about that? Do you feel remorse, sorry that what you've done is wrong? And you've made you feel there's something terrible with you if you don't feel guilty. You're supposed to get angry. Someone's hurt you, get angry at them. Don't let them do that to you. You can do whatever you like to me. It's called compassion. I'm going to rebel against that. I'm going to rebel against fear. I'm going to rebel against picking up all the bad things from the past. I'm going to rebel against allowing any bad karma to take me to hell at the end of my life. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to pick up the eggs, all the good things I've done, forgive all my mistakes, forgive other people's mistakes, and remember all the wonderful things my friends have done. That way, there's only one place you can go, to heaven. It's your choice. The amazing thing about Buddhism, it's not any God doing this. No one is forcing you or judging you. There's no one pushing and pulling you. It's you. You've got no one to blame. It's you're completely free. Even this moment, you're in complete full charge of your destiny. Your happiness and suffering is nothing to do with what happened to you in the past. Your happiness is in your hands right now. Doesn't matter what you've gone through, you can be free. You can be happy. You can even be enlightened in this very moment. The doors of the deathless are open, said the Buddha. Those who've got faith and courage, walk through. As I talk this evening, dependent origination, what you'd have to do to go to heaven to be enlightened. Okay, there we go. Okay, I hope I've challenged a few of you this evening, tested you out, gone against the usual way of doing things. Any questions or comments or complaints? Yeah. Okay. If you let go of any preference to say whatever, it really depends what you'd be doing before, just the inclinations of your life. Sometimes that's very, very good to let go of preference. Instead of preference, let go of measuring. Because measuring is very good. No good, no bad. No judging. Can you do that? Then actually you're freeing yourself. That's a very good way to do it. But sometimes that you really can't do that. When you say no preference, you're just allowing the inclinations, which are very often inclinations of negativity, to come up. You need to train yourself, first of all. If you're an enlightened person, then you can say no preference, and that's natural. But a lot of times, no preference. You try that when you're at a bar, when you're at a banquet. No preference, no preference. And you end up taking everything you like and not taking what you don't like. So sometimes the preference is a bit more difficult than that. Or just, I can't resist saying this when it comes into your mind about this one of our monks years ago. It's a very funny monk. He was saying, you know, as a young man, that he was a Buddhist, and say, well, you know, you're supposed to sort of, as a Buddhist, look upon, you know, the opposite sex as being ugly. You know, you do the, what call your super meditations. Instead of actually looking at the beautiful part, you look at the ugly part. And so he said, yeah, look at the ugly part. That woman over there, her hair is dead, skin is dead, the teeth are dead, the nails are dead. It's all dead on the outside. You know, it's just bones and blood and gore inside. And thinking like that, just a bag, and it's inside there, right in the middle there is this line of feces, because that's not in there anyway. And thinking like that, but then he said, but she'll do. You see, it's all right actually to play these games, but sometimes you say no preference is no preference, but okay, that'll do. So a lot of times it's playing around. So you've got to be very careful. That's what it is, isn't it? Even with boys as well, you know, sort of, you know, he's such a rotten, he's just so selfish, he never cleans up after him, but yeah, he'll do. Okay. Did it sort of answer your question, sort of? No, never mind. Try my best. I'm not going to allow it to bother me. Any other question? Yeah, go on. No, it was just 2 weeks. A couple of weeks, yeah. Very, very cute. Yeah. Yeah, making amends to make let go of the guilt. Letting go is making amends. That's the best amends you could do. Because when you let go, you're freeing yourself of the guilt. You're freeing yourself of the desire to punish. You're freeing yourself of the pain and the crippling effect that those memories have on your ability to serve and help. When you let go, only then are you free to serve and be a whole human being and be able to really be compassionate and serve in the world. Otherwise, a person is like emotionally crippled. They can't do anything. They can't help themselves. They can't help others. How can they make amends? Too often we think that, oh, we've got to punish ourselves and that way we can pay off our debt. Yeah. Yeah, so if that's possible, if that can be done, but it's not absolutely necessary, because sometimes in our life, the family members, sometimes that if they were Buddhist, they wouldn't need that, because they're trying to get rid of their anger, and their anger is their concern. They have to let go of their own anger, just, you know, saying sorry, or just saying, you know, punish me, or what do you want me to do? Does that really get rid of their anger? It always actually puts the responsibility of overcoming anger with somebody else. It's victims again. I'm a victim and I've got to get revenge. I've got to let somebody else, you know, whether it's that person who hurt you, whether it's a psychologist or whether it's a religion, and we rely upon that to heal us instead of taking responsibility and healing ourselves. That's the best way. Okay, so thank you for listening to this talk this evening on Tibetan origination of, what was it, How We Get Reborn.